if you're innovating, creating, or making a difference.
This show is for you. Welcome to Over Coffee. I'm Dot Cannon. Here on Over Coffee, we talk with artists and innovators about the process of changing the world in terms of what they do.
When I work with a flash mob troupe, or if I'm organizing one for my own, one of the questions I ask is, what could go wrong? What could we be accused of doing wrong? And how many ways could people get upset with us?
Award-winning attorney Ruth Carter has the best kind of expertise on flash mob law. Not only legal knowledge, but also experience. Ruth is both the founder of Carter Law Firm in Arizona and the co-founder of Improv AZ, a prank and flash mob troupe. And she's going to be a featured speaker at the 2015 New Media Expo coming up in Las Vegas, April 13th through 16th. Ruth, what do you remember very best from your growing up years that made you the exact opposite of a stereotype of a lawyer and the creative innovator you are today?
Only one.
One of the things, let's say it that way.
One of the things. You know, I would probably say that one of the things that helped make me who I am was the fact that I was a gymnast, and I was training at least 15 hours a week every week since I was, you know, 10, 12, competing, creating routines, and really combining determination, work ethic, performance, all into one experience.
How much fun must that have been? What was one of your best experiences as a gymnast?
Oh, gosh. It's so hard to say. I really can't pick one instant. I just have to say it's the entire environment of training in the same gym for 10 years and having this second family of your teammates, and you really get down to your raw being when you're in that space where you're just dripping sweat off your forehead and you're working so hard. And it's a different environment than anything I've ever experienced.
Does a courtroom seem like a total breeze after that?
You know, I had a coach that for years said, and I still believe this is true, you will never do anything harder than balance beam.
I love that. Before we get into what you're doing today, where was one of the places that you competed that you really enjoyed most?
Probably my most memorable competition experience was the year I qualified to the national championships at for my division. So it was incredible to fly from California to Florida to compete and spend a whole week dedicated to just this one competition.
Did you come home with all kinds of great memories and medals and everything?
Memories, yes. Medals, no.
However, competing is something that deserves a medal right there.
Yes.
Fast forward to today, with three books, being an attorney, and getting to speak at NMX, and a co-founder of a flash mob. How did all this start for you?
It started because I hated my job. Before law school, I was a mental health therapist, and it was a complete bad fit for me. And I really didn't know what I wanted to do. And a friend of the family said, you can't go wrong with a law degree. So I said, perfect. I'm going to go to law school. I will have 3 years to figure out this career crisis. And while I was there during my first year, I got involved in participating in flash mobs and organizing flash mobs. And that led to contacts within the social media community, which got me involved on Twitter and blogging, and it all just kind of snowballed from there.
What's one of the fun things your early flash mobs did?
My very first flash mob was the No Pants Light Rail ride in Phoenix. So 90 of us rode our brand new light rail in January in our underpants.
Oh, goodness. Weren't you freezing?
In Phoenix?
Okay, no.
Not so much, but they do it all over the world on the same day. So there were places where they were doing it where it was probably below freezing and snowing. But we were actually pretty comfortable.
One aspect of flash mobs that people do not think of is the legal aspects. Before now, I wouldn't have said there are any legal aspects to a flash mob. What aren't people thinking about?
When I work with a flash mob troupe, or if I'm organizing one for my own, one of the questions I ask is, what could go wrong? What could we be accused of doing wrong, and how many ways could people get upset with us and try to mitigate those things? So it could be issues like trespassing if you're in a mall, or If you want to dance in the middle of the street, well, you could be blocking a thoroughfare and looking at intellectual property rights in regards to photographs and music and video. Sometimes you have to ask yourself, is this a situation where we should ask permission in advance from somebody, or do we just take the risk and beg forgiveness later if we have to?
What works better for you with your own flash mob, Improv AZ?
It depends. For the most part, we beg forgiveness if we have to, which I think we've been confronted by police once, but we were in the right, and the mall cops thought they were. But there was one flash mob where we were working with another organization to promote an event that they were doing at a mall, and so we knew for that we had to get their permission, because I don't know about other shopping malls, but the ones in the Phoenix area do not like flash mobs, and they will either ban you from the premises or have you arrested for trespassing.
That's kind of a shocker, because most people seem to really love flash mobs.
Well, yes, I think people love flash mobs, but mall cops don't like commotion. And if you are a retailer at a mall, if people are watching a flash mob, that means they're not shopping. So they aren't necessarily happy when you're taking people away from shopping.
Ah, all right. And what we failed to say that I failed to say before is, of course, you and I are having a conversation. This is not to be construed as legal advice in any way. Contact a really good attorney like Ruth Carter for professional services if you want to actually get legal advice. Did that just cover me, hopefully?
Yes, thank you. That's the same type of disclaimer I give when I give presentations.
Now, speaking of which, you are giving an exciting presentation at New Media Expo, and would you tell me a little bit about what you'll be talking about?
So for New Media Expo, I will be doing a presentation called Social Media Horror Stories and How to Avoid the Same Fate. So we'll be looking at recent events where people have, most of the time unintentionally, made a major legal misstep with their social media, whether it was on Twitter or blogging, and talking about how these situations could have been avoided.
Let's give, if you don't mind that, a preview of one of the recent social media nightmares that could have been avoided.
So the one that most people know about is the hashtag has Justine landed yet. This was a woman who I believe was in the communications department of a company who thought she was making kind of a funny tweet before she got on an airplane for 12 hours. She was going to South Africa, and she put out a tweet. You can look it up and get the exact thing she said. But it was basically like, I'm going to Africa, hope I don't get AIDS, ha ha ha, I'm white.
Oof.
Yeah, it was really offensive. And from what I've heard from interviews she's done since then, she didn't mean it to be taken so literally. However, on the internet, you don't have things like voice tone, and even then, sometimes you think something's funny in the moment. When looking back, you're like, ooh, yeah, no, that wasn't as funny as I thought it was. Sometimes that also happens when people are angry. They think it's justified in the moment. When looking back, they realize it was thoughtless. So she gets on an airplane for 12 hours. There's no internet on the flight. By the time she lands, she had only had, I think, less than 200 Twitter followers when she put that tweet out there. By the time she landed, from what I could tell, the world hated her. She was fired from her job, and her reputation was severely tarnished. And she was, she was receiving threats, and she was, being publicly shamed for what she said. And on one hand, I see what happened. I go, hey, natural consequences for your behavior. But on the flip side, it's like, wow, these are some long-term effects you have to live with now because of one thoughtless tweet that you thought was funny in the moment.
It strikes me as a thoughtless tweet, but it also sounds really racist and really cruel no matter what tone of voice she had said it in. So
I agree with that. But from what, in subsequent interviews, she made it sound like she didn't realize how racist it sounded when the thought crossed her mind.
Wow. So that would definitely be one rule is, don't be stupid with social media, is what I'm thinking.
Right. Yeah. Think before you tweet, think before you post, because once it goes out there, you can never take it back, and you never know, how far a post is going to go due to retweets and things like that.
With your own blog and with your own social media, how did you first get involved in blogging and tweeting, Facebooking, things of that nature while you were in law school?
So I actually got a Twitter account because my flash mob troop was going to be doing a flash mob while I was out of town, but they were going to be live tweeting while they were doing it. And so I joined Twitter so I could follow along from afar and just watch them in action. So that's why I created the account, but I've since fallen in love with the platform, and I love using it to talk with people, to network, to promote things that I'm doing, to promote things other people are doing. It's my favorite social media platform. And then for blogging, I had friends who were bloggers, more involved in social media, who said, you know, you have a voice worth sharing. Why don't you start a blog? So a few weeks later, UndeniableRuth.com came into being, and I've been blogging there ever since. And then when I opened Carter Law Firm, that site got its own blog. So now I write for 4 websites total, and so blogging is just, blogging is part of my life now.
And I think The Undeniable Ruth is a very fun blog. What do you yourself do as an attorney, as somebody who knows what your rights are, to protect your own intellectual property and perhaps some other areas that most bloggers may not know about?
So the way I protect my rights is, first and foremost, one of my rules are don't put anything online that you wouldn't put on the front page of the newspaper. It's a good rule of thumb to prevent yourself from putting something out there that you're going to regret later. And then in terms of my intellectual property rights, I'm very thoughtful about what images I use online, where I get pictures if I'm not using a photo that I took myself. So I use Creative Commons. I have friends who are photographers who have given me permission to use their work. I will seek out a photographer and say, hi, I love this photo. May I please use it? So far, no one said no to me. And then on the backside, I watch my site's analytics, because many times when somebody is violating my copyright, they think it's okay to use whatever they want as long as they give an attribution and a link back. And what they've really done is commit copyright infringement and told me about it. So that's how I discovered copyright infringement. And then a few weeks ago, I actually applied to register my trademark, The Undeniable Ruth, with the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office.
Congratulations. That's exciting stuff. What if somebody does, with good intentions, put up, okay, Ruth Carter says this on her website, The Undeniable Ruth. What would be fair use versus not fair use?
Fair use is a very gray area. And the first thing I tell people is fair use is a defense. It is not a permission slip. If you want permission, go ask for it. What fair use is when you are building on what somebody else has done. And there is a list of criteria that the court will apply if it goes that far, where they will evaluate what was the original, what did you do with the original to determine if what you did is fair use. So something like commentary is usually fair use. So if you said, you know, Ruth Carter wrote this blog post and gave a quote and then went on to say either why they liked it, why they disagreed with it, why I'm wrong, and just added their own thoughts to the topic, that is likely fair use versus had they just said, oh, Ruth Carter wrote this great blog post and then just copied and pasted the original content without adding any original thoughts, that's more likely to be infringement.
Would they be doing well to contact you first and say, hey, may I use thus and so off your website?
Oh, absolutely. And I've had people come to me and say, this has been a great post. May I use it? Whether it's in the classroom or since I'm a lawyer, we have continuing legal education. Some people want to use it as part of their materials. So, yes, if you ask permission and you get it, you're great. Yahtzee. Good for you. No more problems. As long as you get permission from somebody who has the authority to give you permission. I saw a situation once where a magazine asked a bride if they could use her wedding photos for a photo spread. And unfortunately, the bride was not the copyright holder. It was the photographer. And so they thought they were doing everything above board, and it turned out they had violated a copyright inadvertently. So we had to fix that.
And what happens when you do violate a copyright inadvertently? You give me the right to use your picture, for example. The photographer gets upset. What's the legal recourse, if any, that I might have?
That would be up to the copyright holder to decide which avenue they pursue, whether it would be to require you to pay a licensing fee or a cease and desist to make you stop using it. They could just grant you permission and say, hey, don't do it again, but I'll give you permission this time. Or they could sue you for copyright infringement.
Which is a really scary thought. What have you found? Let's go on with your story about becoming a lawyer here. You fell in love with law. You fell in love with social media.
and you were in law school. What happened for you right after you opened your law firm in January 2012?
While I was waiting for the phone to ring?
Mm-hmm.
I probably spent my first 4 or 5 months just trying to build my business, get my name out there, blogging, you know, as much as I could to let people know that even though I'm a new lawyer, I know what I'm talking about. When you are a new business owner, you tend to have a lot of free time because you're trying to bring business in. You don't have a lot of business to do. So I used some of my downtime to write my first book.
And let's take a look at that one. If I remember correctly, that is about not getting fired, sued, or killed when you write your blog.
Right. The legal side of blogging, how not to get sued, fired, arrested, or killed.
Please share a tip from that book with me and my audience.
Oh, let's see. Good tip from that one. Here's my other rule of thumb when it comes to anything about posting online. Assume that 4 people are going to see everything you put out there. Your best friend, your worst enemy, your boss, and your mother. If you don't want one of those people to see it, don't put it on your blog.
I love that. What a great rule. If it would upset my mom, I'm not putting it out there.
Right.
We ought to also mention you received a pretty exciting honor after you opened your law firm, being named a legal rebel by the American Bar Association.
Yes, the first and so far only one ever selected from Arizona.
What was that like for you? How did you find out?
I found out when I got the email saying, congratulations, you won. And this is, and I've been following the Legal Rebels. It's a group that the American Bar Association selects 10 people a year who are innovative in the area of law. You're doing something different or new. For some people, it is a type of lifetime achievement award. And so I had the thought in the back of my head, yeah, maybe when I'm like 3-5 years in, I'll do something worthy of being named a rebel. So I never thought of applying when I was 6 months, you know, into practice. And then this email comes in that says, oh, you know, congratulations. And at first I thought it said, congratulations, you've been nominated. And I was like, oh, that's nice. And then I went back and reread it and went, holy crap, I won.
That's fantastic. In your first year as a professional, as a lawyer, what were some of the best challenges that you faced once you were trying to apply laws to something that didn't exist when the laws were written?
That is a constant challenge in my life because the world of innovation is moving at light speed. The law tends to lag at least 3 years behind. So, for example, the copyright law that we have now was written in 1978. So the internet didn't exist when they wrote the law that applies to the internet. So it is a challenge when you're looking at how was the law written for the times when times have changed so much. And sometimes I would call the, you know, copyright office for information. They will never give you legal advice, but you can call for clarification on the law. And depending on which person answers the phone, you might get a different answer.
Wow. Can we say total gray area here?
Complete gray area. And it's going to continue to be a gray area until either there is case law, meaning court cases about these issues, or they revise the law to apply to current technology.
How do you think some of the laws that are current might be revised to apply to current technology with our flash mobs, our blogs, social media, and whatever else is coming down the pike?
I'm really curious to see if laws will change related to privacy and the way images are used, because right now there is no expectation of privacy in public. A lot of people think because they are in a photo that they have rights to it, which isn't always the case. You don't have copyright to it most of the time, and as long as they're not making money, the fact that they just put it out there and you're unhappy doesn't mean you have rights or any recourse. I don't think that's going to change, but I wonder. But we do now have the issue of revenge porn, where people are posting photos from their intimate relationships online, usually when they're unhappy that the relationship is over. And currently, some states have passed laws against that, but I recently heard that Congress is considering passing a federal law, because that is one of the challenges we deal with, is a lot of these issues are at the state level. But because of the internet, you have people over state lines potentially committing crimes. And so it's a question of how do you go after people in these situations.
And the federal law sounds like the first step in the right direction to that, if applied right. I said that very cautiously because it can be misinterpreted too.
Exactly.
When you talk about pictures and the use of pictures online, what are some of the laws that apply to press and the use of photos and video that might also apply to the bloggers and the podcasters that you'll be speaking to at New Media Expo?
One of the challenges is sometimes determining is or when is a blogger a member of the media versus not, because there are certain laws that relate to the media in terms of protecting sources or being able to distribute information as a news provider, which gives you a lot more leeway than if you were just posting things as a private person. So if a blogger is brought up on civil or criminal charges, one of the questions may be which law applies. Is it the one that applies to media or the one that applies to private citizens? And each of these cases is addressed on its face. And I really hope that courts continue to do that, because there shouldn't be a blanket rule that says all bloggers are members of the media or not, because there's so many different ways people use blogs that you can't have a rule that applies to everyone. You have to look at exactly what the person is doing and which law applies.
No one size fits all. Have you seen many bloggers brought up on criminal charges as a result of what they wrote?
Not too many. It wasn't a blog issue. It was a MySpace issue. It's how far back this one goes. It was a situation where somebody created a fake account pretending to be a teenage boy who befriended a teenage girl and then told the girl she should go kill herself, and she did. That person was actually brought up on criminal charges, was found to be not guilty, but this woman was charged.
It sounds very much like it goes back to what we were talking about with the Twitter, and that one malicious tweet is, don't be malicious, don't be insensitive, and don't be stupid.
Yeah, it would be so wonderful if people would just do that.
Some will and some won't, unfortunately. What would you consider one of the best lessons you've learned as an attorney since you started your law practice?
Oh, wow. As a blogger or as a business owner?
Well, any way that you would like to take that. Well, maybe we could even say as an attorney, as a creative, as a human being. What's one of your best lessons since you started your law practice?
As a person, I treat the world as if there is no differentiation between me, the professional, and me, the person. Because there's so much information out there on both sides that people can look at and see and judge me on, that if you come at me with something from my personal life in the professional arena, I'll just own it. And I think a lot of people try to think that they have a private life even though they have a public Facebook page. So, a publicly accessible Facebook account. And that's not how it is anymore. I do believe in people having privacy and employers leaving employees alone when they're on their personal time, when they're not breaking any laws and not dissing the company, but not everybody agrees with me on that one.
It has vastly changed. The world has vastly changed in just the past 10 years with all this internet stuff. Before we have to wrap up, would you tell me a little bit about the very cool thing you do the first Monday of every month, your legal mentoring?
Ah, the legal mentoring. Yes, I was wondering, where are you going with this? I spend the afternoon every Monday, the first Monday of the month, at a co-working space called Gangplank, where I do free legal mentoring. So I'm available for people who can't afford legal services to come in and talk about what's going on with their business, and I can give them some general information and give them a direction to move in. So it's the one time I get to work for free.
What if somebody's in your geographical area and they'd like to know more? How do they contact you?
You can find me on Twitter at RB Carter, or you can email me at rcarter@venjuris.com.
rcarter@venjuris.com, which, by the way, congratulations on your new office that I understand is something new for you for this year. And before I say goodbye here, Ruth, what would you like people most to learn from you, your work with Venjuris,
your Improv AZ, and your Carter Law Firm about innovation, creativity, and making a difference.
Wow, what do I want people to know? I feel like I should say something profound.
You can say, I want to go walk my fish now if you want to.
You know, I think I'm gonna use a quote from the great Zephyrin Cochran. It's my tagline on all my emails. It's, don't try to be a great man. Just be a man and let history make its own decisions.
I love that. Ruth, thank you for your time today.
Thank you so much for having me.
You and I have been listening to award-winning attorney and best-selling author Ruth Carter. Her specialties as an attorney are social media, blogging, and flash mob law. Besides being the founder of Carter Law Firm in Phoenix, Arizona, Ruth is also the co-founder of Flash Mob and Prank Troupe Improv AZ. And if you happen to be in Las Vegas for New Media Expo, you might like to catch her presentation on social media horror stories from the legal trenches and how to avoid the same fate. That's happening at 11 o'clock Tuesday morning, April 14th at Westgate Conference Room 11. Also, check out Ruth's blog, UndeniableRuth.com. That's UndeniableRuth.com. And that concludes this edition of Over Coffee. Thank you for listening. If you'd like to hear more Over Coffee podcasts, our link is TwoMavericks.com. That's TwoMaverix.com. And you can contact us at TwoMavericks@gmail.com. The music you're hearing is royalty-free production music provided by Pond5 at Pond5.com. I'm Dot Cannon. Here's wishing you a cappuccino day.